Are you achieving your goals at work and in your relationships and personal life? Personal accountability is the key. Mark Samuel is author of the book, Making Yourself Indispensable, The Power of Personal Accountability. As president of Impact Corporation, Mark helps individuals and teams around the world overcome obstacles to reach new levels of fulfillment, excellence, and success. Visit www.marksamuel.com to learn about his accountability coaching services and products, or call 323-969-0088. MarkSamuel.com, success you can count on. 323-969-0088. Well, welcome again here on Circles of Change. As always, love starting the show out with my partner, Mark Samuel in Los Angeles. How are you this morning, Mark?
I'm doing well, Zara.
Great. I've got my feet up. The Tucson Festival of Books wiped me out last weekend. So it's good to be live sitting down in the studio for a change. Well, I wanted to start our conversation out. We're calling this, Can You Really Walk Up an Escalator or Play Big by Keeping the Big Picture? And so for our listeners, if you could picture the following. And this was a video clip that was part of a workshop that Mark and I were involved with a couple weeks ago. Picture people walking into this incredibly large atrium, major office building, you know, dressed in their suits, carrying their briefcases. And they get up on a, you know, kind of a double wide escalator and they start going up. And suddenly the escalator stops. And, you know, the two participants kind of jerk back and forward. And the one guy says, I don't need this to happen to me today. And the woman behind him, she starts scrounging in her purse looking for her cell phone. And she goes, do you have a phone? He goes, no, I don't. And then they start yelling, help, help, the elevator's stuck, help. And, of course, there's nobody to be found. And as viewers of this video, you're saying, you got to be kidding me. And they just stand there screaming, help! And they're like, I can't, this is interrupting my day, and so on. And so you step back and you say, well, why don't they just kind of walk up the escalator? And so Mark and I thought, you know, there's a lot of instances that in our life, we lose the bigger picture and we stay grounded in perhaps a perspective that really is way off the mark. Right, Mark?
Absolutely. And it's, in a sense, so easy to do, especially based on what I would call our history, because our history brings in the worry, the concern, the fear, the, oh my gosh, there's a problem, and all of a sudden then we contract, and we get all caught up in the situation, and it literally prevents us from the emotional response. It actually prevents us from thinking clearly and getting outside of the problem to find a very easy solution.
Yeah, in fact, when you and I both sat there in that workshop, and just you couldn't help but chuckle, but then you also kind of didn't want to make eye contact with anyone because you said, ooh, I've done that before, or that kind of dynamic.
Absolutely. Yes, and I think it, again, is we, you know, we talk so much about playing a big game and playing big, but what's really difficult, I find, for myself, is that sometimes my history of playing small may enter the picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, the place I notice it the most, quite honestly, is when I'm in a kind of a new situation, and maybe it's, you know, I'm going to be meeting a new business opportunity type person. It could be like a networking, or it just could be a, you know, someone wants to introduce me to somebody else, or I'm entering a new association meeting or something like mm-hmm. that. And I'm always struck by my going into that situation almost with the, you know, cell memory of how I used to feel insecure doing that 20 years ago.
Yes.
Before I had experience and before I had, you know, my current level of confidence when I work with a client, but I go right into this new meeting or, you know, getting introduced to somebody and thinking very small, even though I'm not that person any longer.
Well, Mark, in fact, for those who don't know you or haven't heard you admit this in certain circles, that, you know, you explained that you are fundamentally an introvert. you know, and are not comfortable in those kind of settings. But anyone who sees you, quote, on All Say, they'll say, really? No, that's not the Mark Samuel I know. But we all bring that with us. You know, the funny example, I think, I recall your reaction to the video. You turned to me and said something, God, that really reminds me of what, a fellow guitar player, was that what it was, who suddenly wanted to play the drums? Share that story, because that's another hook here.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, he was actually the singer in a band that I was in, and he was a wonderful singer, but he always loved sitting at my set and playing, you know, I asked him, I said, wow, it seems like you're pretty good at this. He says, well, I used to play drums. He says, it was my favorite instrument. I played all the time. I said, well, what happened? He said, well, my drum pedal broke, so I gave up the drums. And it was like, that's like, you know, like, you know, like a string breaking on a guitar and say, oh, well, I guess I'll not play guitar anymore. And it was like, to me, the most funny kind of reaction. But I wonder how often we do that, you know, where we run into one little obstacle or something doesn't go the way we planned, and all of a sudden we give up our passion.
Right.
Because it didn't go our way the first time, or we ran into an obstacle.
Sure. Or, you know, there's that old-time joke about the two men that are out fishing, and the one fellow watches his colleague catch some big ones, but he keeps throwing them back, and he just keeps the medium size or small size. And he finally asks his buddy, he says, what are you doing? Why are you giving up the big fish? He says, well, these guys won't fit in my skillet. And so he only fished the skillet. And then I'll take it to the next step. My mother-in-law, bless her heart, she's now in the good place across the line, but she always made meatloaf in a certain size pan. I mean, it was known as the meatloaf pan. And one day we have a big family gathering. She decides to make meatloaf. And what does she do? She makes three little meatloafs, because that was the meatloaf pan, as opposed to she has a very large pan and she could have made one big meatloaf.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it was sort of like, it made absolutely no rational sense other than, but that's the meatloaf pan, or that's the fish frying pan, even though that gentleman probably had another big skillet, but he didn't fry fish in it.
That's exactly right. And so we get locked into these routines. We get locked into a certain kind of thinking. We get locked into, you know, a certain way of approaching situations based on our past without re-exploring, you know, how would I best show up to this today? One of the things that I do before I go to these meetings, when I think about it, is I review my vision.
Yes.
And say, wait a minute, what I'm really here to do is be of service, that I've, you know, built this business now. It's not 20 years ago or 30 years ago when I was just starting. I'm a different person. Now let me show up with, you know, in that embodiment, if you will. And boy, it changes the whole game, because now I make better eye contact. I'm being more bold in my conversations. And it's just a huge difference from when I don't prepare and I just go into the situation, because then my history comes in. It's like I have to actually prepare for these kind of situations. Otherwise, my small self is the one that shows up.
However, you mentioned, though, of not over-preparing, because, you know, unless we had a really good read of your audience before you get there, you might be going down a path that's totally incongruent with what that person needs. I mean, I can recall walking to some meetings and saying, you know, I've got this 5-page presentation or this 20-page document, and I say, you know, I'm not even going to take it out of the folder. I'm just going to sit down and let's have a conversation. And usually that's when, like you say, I can show up, quote, big, and be much more conscious of what else is going on there. Otherwise, I would have missed the opportunity.
Well, you bring up, to me, an outstanding point, because whenever we think of preparation, we think of an agenda.
Right.
We think of, you know, here's what I want to accomplish, or here's what I'm going to present, or here's what I want to say. That, to me, is not the kind of preparation I'm talking about. For me, the preparation is, how do I make sure that I'm in my biggest self, in my most authentic, confident self, as opposed to my old self, that is more familiar to me, but doesn't truly represent me in who I am today. And that's an inner quality. That's not an external script, if you will.
Well, and you know, another fun example here comes to mind, because of course I didn't want to just tell other people's embarrassing moments perhaps on the air here, but one of my own just this past week, and our listeners know my background is engineering, so I'm all about solving problems and doing it quick and so on, which can get in your way sometime, but lo and behold, the car in the garage has a dead battery. It's my son forgot to turn the lights off. So I said, this is going to be a moment of learning for Jake for the first time to learn how to jump a car. So we have to push the car back, and we brought our other vehicle on the outside, one of them a Jeep, in kind of in a 90-degree way. So when we just pushed the car out of the garage, we could pop both hoods and jump them, right? Well, I miscalculated and didn't realize that the batteries were on opposite side. So lo and behold, the battery cables couldn't stretch side to side. So, of course, Jake's kind of saying, uh-oh, what do we do now, Mom? I said, not to worry. Of course, when we push my car out of the garage, there's a third car on the opposite side, but it's my husband's 1966 Ford truck, three on a tree, tricky way to start it, and then I start to panic, like, uh-oh, I don't know how to start this truck, and he's out of town. So I go get the keys, and I'm always already down that path of moving that big truck out of the way so we could swing the Jeep around to the opposite side. And then you know what my son says? Well, you know, Mom, if we just move the Jeep up 6 inches, the cables will click. And I'm thinking, now, how did I miss that one? Right? I mean, I was in full-blown problem-solving panic mode. How am I going to start this other big, tricky, antique car? And it was a matter of just rolling this other Jeep up, you know, maybe another foot. And we still had plenty of room that we then clicked, fired up, both started the car, charged the lights, we're all set. But how did I miss it? And yet it took my son saying, you know, you could just move the car up 12 inches. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, how often do we get caught? I mean, yeah. I think all that happened, again, is what we described at the beginning, is as soon as the emotion of worry mm-hmm. and concern mm-hmm. showed up, then we're not as available, where your son didn't really have that. He's just kind of looking for a solution.
Well, and of course, obviously, too, Mom's ego was a bit in the way, because I was being the almighty parent, knowing how to work with cars since I came out of the automotive business. So this is my right. my teachable moment to my son. And right. lo and behold, I end up on my knees. And he was pretty cool about it. He didn't say, well, duh, Mom, we could move the car, because he probably knew he kind of wasn't feeling good about running the battery dead to start with. But yes, yeah. I got in my own way. But to your point, it was the emotion of the moment. It was me being stuck in, well, I know how to do this. Well, guess what? Yeah, but there was a big hook point. It was me standing on the escalator forgetting I could walk.
You know, but there's two parts to this story, and I think this is really important too, especially for our audience leaders out there, because, okay, so let's just say you got caught in the moment of it and your son had a solution. How many times mm-hmm. have we seen someone in your position
sure.
not listen to your son, say, mm-hmm. don't tell me what to do, mm-hmm. I'll figure this out, I'm going to do it my way, or, you know, no, that's not going to work, and we completely dismiss someone else's idea because we're so attached to the ego
yeah.
and to the one being the teacher that we can't set it down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one thing to be caught, you know, initially into it, Zara, but you really demonstrated great recovery by stepping back and allowing your son to have the better idea. I don't find that happens all the time with managers in the workplace. We get so stubborn and trying, and so often people are threatened
yes.
by their direct reports having the better idea that they may dismiss it even when it is, in fact, the better idea. You didn't do that. To me, that's also a second part of the lesson here.
Yes, and in fact, Mark, I think for our listeners, they're probably, everybody's knowingly shaking their head to know some of companies and organizations' biggest failings come as a result of not respecting the diversity of thinking, upbringing, background. Even our youngest employees, either young in age or young in service with the team, that actually have the golden nuggets to help us go forward.
That's right. And, you know, organizations today all have a desire, oh, we should have more employee engagement,
mm-hmm.
and now let's set up programs for employee engagement, or let's teach them something for employee mm-hmm. engagement. But really what we need to do is make sure that our managers and supervisors who are in place have the emotional intelligence and the emotional maturity to allow for their direct reports to offer ideas, to have ideas. And how do we make sure that the direct reports who have ideas are offering ideas in the direction of where the organization is going, as opposed to taking the organization back to the past? So it's a really interesting piece, but it requires everyone to play a bigger game.
Mm-hmm. It does. And also, you'd say, of course, in a collaborative way, that law allows that cross-functional thinking, because some of our best things that dislodge us from being trapped are, if it's a group of technical people, having someone from the public relations department say, "Oh, that looks interesting. Why don't you guys turn that box to the right?" And everybody kind of goes, "How'd she see that and we didn't?"
Yes. Yes.
So that nature. Well, you know, there's another factor here, of course, too, though. It all comes into trust, as well as trusting others. And another kind of funny story in the same regard. My loving in-laws, who had a bad experience with a dishwasher once, leaked all over the floor when they'd left or something. And you know what? From that point forward, they never trusted the dishwasher to work. And they subsequently moved homes, even had a brand new dishwasher installed. But oh, no, you never used the dishwasher. You actually always wash the dishes by hand. And then here was the amazing salvo, is you put them inside the dishwasher to dry. Now, that doesn't mean you turned it on heat. It was just a nice dishwashing dry rack underneath the counter out of the way. And they never ran the dishwasher. So part of what we deal with is here was a damaged situation. They don't trust dishwashers because they leak. And for the rest of their lives, I mean, we're talking 60 years of their lives, they never would run the dishwasher.
Well, and how often does that actually happen in organizations around processes and procedures that were set up maybe 30, 40 years ago because of a breakdown? So we made sure to set up a procedure to never have that breakdown any longer, but we're so far beyond that with either new technology or new ways of working that that breakdown would never even occur again, but we don't change the procedure, and it adds, 10 or 15 steps or whatever it is that causes great inefficiency or cost.
So this idea, of course, like we're coming back, is to play big, even within organizations, is to really be mindful on the things that keep us small.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And I really am glad you brought up the issue. It does require trust. Mm-hmm. It does require openness. And it certainly requires diverse thinking and getting other people's inputs.
Which, of course, always ripples back to that accountability model that you talk about, Mark, about being very intentional, being open to learning, forgiving ourselves for our own mistakes, let alone those around us. For our listeners, a reminder, marksamuel.com or impaqcorp.com. Mark's book, Making Yourself Indispensable, The Power of Personal Accountability. So our big takeaway today, of course, is that get your drum pedal fixed. Make sure you have all the size of the skillets available and the meatloaf pan. You know, the dishwasher probably still does work. But I think, the idea, too, though, of how we need to calm ourselves and walk into situations, and so that we're open to the ideas of others, let alone our own ideas that might be smothered by something else.
Yes.
Very good. Mark, thank you so much, and have a great balance of the weekend.
Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Yeah, thanks, Zara.
You bet. Catch you next week.